So now we move on to taking a look at the challenges that face the metro area as far as groundwater and drinking water supplies in the long term. So Minnesota really is a state of two halves. We have the metro area with kind of its unique concentration of population and water usage. And once you get outside the metro area, it's really a state of small systems. So these two parts of the state have unique challenges as far as sustainable water supplies, both in terms of quantity and quality into the future. For the metro area, we're fortunate that the Metropolitan Council is a unique entity that's charged specifically with developing plans for long-term water supply in the metro area. Again, we're talking about sustainability, which is both quality and quantity. So today, to talk to us about that and how those challenges have evolved and what we're looking at for the future, we have Lania Ross from Met Council. So thank you, Lania.
We just did some strategic time management. So if I go long, Sandeep has permission to like wave his hands and stop me. So that's what's going on if you see that. Thank you very much for the invitation to join you today. I am Lania Ross, and I work with the Metropolitan Council. I'm an environmental analyst in our Environmental Services Division, which is the slice of Met Council that focuses specifically on water. But what I'd like to share with you today spans the full range of work that the Metropolitan Council does. So it may seem like a lot of information coming at you. It's intentional. And I hope that as I go through this, you see how this all connects to providing safe water, which we're sitting here in the metro area today and appreciate having safe water. It touches on everything that we do in the way we live our lives here in the metro. So I got really excited about this conference topic, and it was hard for me to focus on the scope, but I kind of settled on five things that I hope you leave today with. One, if you don't know who the Met Council is, I hope you leave understanding what our role in regional planning is and connections to water supply. I hope that you get a sense of how the regional planning and policy work that we've done over the years and that we are embarking on right now, we're updating things, is shifting to a more integrated water management approach. We have specific roles in wastewater. When you flush the toilet, we fix that for you. But we also have a watershed planning role and a water supply planning role. So we're trying to really bring those together. In that work, we have been, are, and will be wrestling with a bunch of different issues related to some of the regional trends that we've seen in the past and that we expect in the future. And I would love to have all of you provide some input to that work that we're doing. We, every decade, update long-range policies and system plans. It's kicked off by the census. We go through some update of forecasts, and then we look at our policies. Are they setting us up to be successful given the future we see coming at us? And so, what do we want to be 30 years in the future? What do our communities want? That's the conversations we're having right now. I know all of you think about this and have some opinions, so I'll share some ways that you can provide some input opinions with us. On the flip side, I would also like to share with you some of the really wonderful data that my colleagues have compiled and make available to the public that I think will be helpful in a lot of the work that you do. So I have not followed any PowerPoint guidelines for what slides should look like. They are packed with full hyperlinks so that you can go and find the sources. But my goal is that you'll walk away with some tools and some resources you can use. So, who's the Met Council? We are the regional planning agency for the 7-county metropolitan area. Our mission is to foster efficient and economic growth so that our region can thrive. We're planning, we're providing a sort of base of planning and regional services. So we provide regional wastewater. We also provide regional transportation planning and services. We operate Metro Transit for any of you who use the transit system. We also have a role in the regional parks system, housing, land use. So a very wide range of work goes on at the Met Council. And if we don't have safe water, it all falls apart. So everything we do connects to this goal of safe water. As I had mentioned earlier, the Environmental Services Division of Met Council focuses specifically on water. We want clean water for future generations. That's it. That's our goal. That drives our work every day. And the work that I and my colleagues do every day includes reaching out, building partnerships with a whole range of stakeholders from like federal, state, watershed, county, individual businesses, to long-range planning. That includes asset management planning for our wastewater system, but also helping to support watershed planning, local water supply planning. I must stress, we run a regional wastewater utility. We do not touch water supply utilities. That is solely the responsibility of our local community's public water supply systems. So it's an interesting relationship we have sort of with as a utility, but not a water supply utility. So it's a really interesting place to work. We do provide that wastewater service, but we also provide watershed monitoring and assessment. So we have a lot of data. We provide local technical assistance. Some of the communities in the metro have participated in our water efficiency grant program. So that's kind of the range of work that we are doing. And we have a role to play in it because it is too big for any one entity or any one community to do alone. So again, seven counties, it's 182 different townships and cities in this metropolitan area, over 100 water supply systems. We have more than 3 million residents here right now, which is a little over half the population of Minnesota. So when we talk about safe water in the metro, that impacts a lot of people. And they're very diverse. We have the Native people from, I think it's 11 federally recognized Minnesota tribes, other tribal communities, but it's been growing in diversity. We have a wide range of racial, ethnic groups. I was surprised when our community planners told me that we have over 300 different languages spoken at home here in our metropolitan area. And so when we plan for safe water, we're planning for a lot of different things and working with many different people to try to make decisions that keep our water safe. And that all affects how we do the work that we do it. This, which I know you probably can't see that clearly, but I know you can download these slides later. This is just a history map. It's a sketch that water resources staff at the council sat down and sketched out together several years ago when we did our last decadal update of our regional plans. And this was to kind of bring together and build a shared understanding internally of some of the big historic events, big shifts in the landscape, literally and figuratively, and the responses by water managers at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level. These are some of the things that had a notable impact on how Met Council did the work we did in the past, why we changed how we do things, and it also illustrates some of the evolution in an ongoing shift to more integrated water management that we have been stepping into. Right, it's all one water, but sometimes in the past we are like, well, I have a flooding issue here, so I'm going to deal with that. Or I have a failing wastewater treatment here, so we're going to deal with that. Or this well is going dry, so I'm going to deal with that. But those decisions all have implications for one another. So we're starting to consider trade-offs, balances, more and more as we do our work. Each of your organizations could build something, and it would end up similar to this, although individual details would probably vary. I did highlight in red kind of where the Safe Drinking Water Act was passed in 1974, so you can see that action in the context of a lot of other stuff that's going on. Something else really exciting happened in 1974. I was born, so I kind of had this realization that I have lived my entire life in an environment that coexisted with the Safe Drinking Water Act. And then I did the math and I realized that I have spent over half my life working on water supply technical and policy challenges in the metropolitan area. So it was kind of I'm feeling very old or experienced, So this was an interesting presentation for me to put together. So I want to spend the rest of this presentation talking about some of that work that I've been doing and some of the trends that I've seen, and share some of the work that some of my colleagues across the Met Council have been working on over that time period. And I think, I'm kind of hoping, that the slide resolution is really bad. I did that intentionally. I just took screenshots off our websites because I am here as a representative of the Met Council. I'm going to share a whole bunch of work that is not work that I did. It's the work that my colleagues did, and they deserve credit for it, and they deserve to have you go to the source. And so if you want to get the high resolution of any of these figures, there's a website on this slide, and that's where you can get it, literally a screenshot. And you can see, this is the population in the Twin Cities metropolitan area from, 1970 on the left. And I kept the black dotted line, just keeps that 1970 population. The lower bars are households in the metropolitan area. And you can see our population has grown substantially over the years. The green bar represents the population in 2022. And we project that the population is going to increase even further. So the purple bars are population projections that we did in 2015 for the years 2030 and 2040. We're a regional planning agency. We plan out 30 plus years. We're not the 10-year wellhead protection plan or the 10-year local water supply plan. We're thinking out further than that. When we plan our wastewater investments, infrastructure investments, we're thinking 50 years, 60 years. So having this kind of information is really critical to the work that we're doing. And there is a whole lot of other socioeconomic data on this website. So if you haven't gone there, please do. You can look at it by city. So if you're doing city planning work, this is a great resource. But you can also look at it by county or by the whole region. So we expect to see change in the future. But our expectations of change in the future is also changing. This is a graph of our forecast, kind of the purple bars that you saw on the previous slide. The council is currently in the process of updating our regional and our local forecasts, which is never easy, but it's even more complicated if you have a global pandemic right about the time of the census. So our demographers have been really wrestling with this and doing some amazing work. This graph illustrates how our understanding of future regional growth has changed recently. So the orange-yellowish dotted line illustrates the forecasts that we developed back in 2015, those purple bars you saw. We updated them in 2019, and that is the blue dotted bar, and they were slightly lower. And we just updated them again in 2023, and they have been lowered slightly again. Now, we're still expecting substantial growth in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, about 700,000 more people by 2050. But that's about 100,000 fewer people than we were projecting back in 2015. So our sense of the future, there's some uncertainty, right? Surprise, surprise. And I think that is one of the shifts that I'm seeing in our planning work, is more openness to talking about and exploring that uncertainty in our future plans. So that's a really exciting piece of the conversations we've been having internally. Land use also changed over that time. On the left is a map of land use in 1984. On the right is 2020 land use, again. This came out of a presentation related to some of the policy research we're doing, so if you'd like to learn more about how we're thinking about land use and water policy, there's a link here. They're very similar, but you might notice how the yellow residential development has expanded into Woodbury on the east. You can also see growth going up into Anoka County, particularly along the I-94 corridor. And look at the yellow expanding around Lake Minnetonka, growth moving out to the west, away from our really productive Prairie St. Jordan Aquifer. There's also growth moving south into northern Dakota County and south into northeastern Scott County. So these are some of the landscape changes that we pay attention to, and we have data. This land use data is on the Minnesota Geospatial Commons as well. And we have multiple years that you can look at. So as that land use changes, right, everybody needs water. So we've seen changes in our water supply infrastructure. This is just a simple map of the wells drilled in the region. I did this a while ago, so it's from the wells drilled between 1940 and 2010. I called out the public community wells in orange. Those are municipal wells, but also non-municipal public wells. The ones that I think are interesting are the private wells, which are blue, and I shaded them. So the darkest blue are the wells that were drilled in the 1940s, and the lightest blue are the wells that were drilled in 2010. And you can see how they illustrate the spread of water use and development out from that urban core into our more rural areas. Every time I estimate this, I come up with around 60 plus thousand private wells in our metropolitan area. My coworker, Henry McCarthy, did an estimate in the agricultural communities in the metro. He estimates 42,000 private wells. Just to give you a sense of the scope, I mean, that's like a city, big city. So thinking about their safe water is an important part of water supply planning. Non-residential development has also changed over time. And so this is some interesting work that's been done by our researchers, I have a link to a recent presentation that they gave. In the 2021 land use inventory, our researchers highlighted several trends related to non-residential use, but one that I really want to highlight here is related to industrial. So you sort of have three buckets of non-residential land use here. On the left is commercial, office, institutional, mixed use in the middle, and industrial land use on the right. And this is the net change in acres. So for each of these three buckets, the green bar is the net change in acres from 2000 to 2005. The light bar is 2005 to 2010. Medium blue is 2010 to 2016. And that dark blue is 2016 to 2020. So for each of these three categories. One notable pattern that our researchers called out is the industrial development in recent years for solar farms specifically. And so that purple part of the industrial change is the net change in acres in industrial land use used for solar farms. So we think about trends. And whenever you think about land use, it's important to think about what are the potential contaminants and what's the risk to water supplies. But also, as we think about that, needing to be more specific, because the risk to water supplies from a solar farm, which I know is still being explored somewhat, is different than the risk to water supplies from a landfill. So this is, I think, interesting land use planning and land use data that we should be connecting to our source water protection. And we do those solar farms because we have some goals related to climate change, because our climate is changing. And this, of course, is not Met Council data. This is a big shout out to all the climatologists and researchers who are providing really important climate trend related data to help us understand what our long range land use and asset investment and industrial site plans should be to help us be resilient and prosperous and thrive. So this is the Minnesota average winter daily minimum temperatures from 1896 to 2021. And I focus on this data in particular because for me, this starts to get me thinking about our snowpack, which in the Twin Cities metropolitan area is our biggest source of recharge. So if this is getting warm and running off over frozen soils, it's not recharging, and that freaks me out. I also think that this is important to consider because there's implications for chloride, warmer temps, more freeze-thaw, more ice, more salt on sidewalks and roads, more chloride. And so I also thought it was interesting that, for reference, the Safe Drinking Water Act in 1974 shows up during a relatively cold stretch of winters. And so if you like hold up your hand and block off the graph after the Safe Drinking Water Act was passed, they were making decisions and planning. The leaders who were thinking about water were maybe thinking that the climate wasn't changing. like the trend looks very different if you cut this data off at 1976. Still there, but it's pretty clear when you look at some recent data. So when we're making plans now, we base things on our experience and kind of what we think the future is going to look like. We tend to be biased towards it looking how we feel it looks right now. Is that true or not? So I think when we make long-range plans, letting ourselves be open to this envelope of uncertainty being beyond what we feel and experience. So I'm just kind of throwing that out there for your thoughts. Another big trend we've seen over the decades is increased investment in water infrastructure, including treatment. In our system, the wastewater system for the region, this has led to some significant water quality improvements. So this is just one example. This is a graph of annual total phosphorus discharge by plants from 2000 to 2021. And it's not all the time you get to point to a graph that shows an 88% decrease in total phosphorus. Very cool. This is not cheap. Effective treatment upgrades can happen. We have really amazing engineering options, but they have a cost. And so I think we're all wrestling with this and doing trade-offs, but as we in the Met Council look to improve water quality, we want to make sure we're not negatively impacting our downstream receiving waters. There are things we can do through both point source improvements at our plants, like this, but there are also things that are really beneficial through non-point source improvements, and that is working with our upstream watershed partners to reducing phosphorus in the whole system. So there's this integrated water management, and how do we most effectively achieve our goals of reducing phosphorus and other things going into downstream receiving waters. Other water quality parameters are not improving. Chloride levels have increased in Twin Cities water bodies. Over two decades, the Met Council did a study on chloride concentration levels and trends for 18 streams. And what we see is that since 1999, nearly all the streams in the study are experiencing rising chloride trends. I know a lot of the work that many of you are doing in the room has found similar. I appreciated, Bob, your slide about chloride in groundwater, because surface waters and groundwaters, as we all know, are connected. And so these trends are connected to our groundwater system as well. So that's something I think we're all wrestling with. Another thing that's an important piece that we're having to consider in our regional planning and policy update process is something you are all very intimately familiar with, and that is that some parts of the state and some parts of the region are more vulnerable to contamination than others. And so we really tap into the hydrogeologic mapping, the soils mapping, to understand where parts of our region are more at risk, and sharing that with our land use planners, our other planners, so they are taking that into consideration in the plans that they're making. Where do we want to target different programs? Where might we want to set different land use guidance? Those are some of the things that we've been having conversations about. Kind of related to that, parts of our region we prioritize differently for drinking water protection. And so you heard about this a little earlier. Drinking water supply management areas, there are gaps between our drinking water supply management areas, although 60,000 well owners are not protected by a drinking water supply management area. We also have the challenge in the metropolitan area that a lot of our drinking water supply management areas overlap one another. So this is just a map of where all those DWSMAs are in the metropolitan area, and they're shaded so that when one or more overlap each other, they are darker blue. There are places in the metropolitan area where five drinking water supply management areas overlap. And that raises some jurisdictional questions, some questions about who pays for what, where, and is it fair? Are you telling this property owner to do this, and I'm telling this property owner to do that? how vulnerable is this spot anyway? So these are some of the challenges. We have started a project with the Metropolitan Council, Department of Health, and communities in the West Metro to work together on a pilot project to do wellhead protection planning together. So we are in sort of phase one, updating a groundwater model and a delineation of where all of those communities' drinking water supply management areas are. We're gonna start having conversations about, do we agree on what the vulnerability of different parcels are? And then how do we work together on a shared implementation plan? So that's some planning work that's underway right now. So all of this information that I am sharing with you is stuff that we're talking about every day at the Metropolitan Council, again, because we are in the process right now of updating our regional plans and regional policies. We have set out to kind of dig more deeply into these issues and others through a series of policy research papers. They're just exploratory topics that staff have been talking about, researching, compiling some information on, and they're designed to spark some information and reactions. So we are actually sharing these publicly and want to get Metro stakeholders to provide input, including, why are you talking about this? This is irrelevant. Or, you got that wrong. You should be thinking about it this way. Or, here is what I think is really important that we need as a resource to tackle this. Met Council, please help us out with that. Or, don't step over here. Anything is what we're looking for right now. So we have papers on the topics of water reuse, water and climate, rural water concerns, a very important topic. I know we're going to hear a lot related to that today. Wastewater planning and service considerations, water quality, which is big and high level. There's a lot of really interesting information there. And we also have a paper on protecting source water areas. So I did include the link here. Please, after this conference, check it out. Share your reactions, your thoughts. This is really important that we do not sit in our bubble and think we know we have the answers to how everybody needs to do things. Like, that is not going to work. We need to know what you're wrestling with, what resources you need to help your communities make good decisions. Oh, that sounded lectury. I apologize. I just really want your input. And we're doing this right now. So this is the schedule for the process to update the regional plans. We hope to have a plan out for public review next June, and then our plan is to adopt it by the end of the year. And then supporting local implementation is the next phase. So we want to make sure we have the resources ready to go in 2026 to help communities update their local comprehensive plans. Where are they putting their parks? How are they guiding land use? Where are they wanting to expand their highway system? Those are the kind of planning challenges that are going to kick off in 2026. Because we want to set ourselves up to weather the future, and we're not entirely sure what that future is. So for the rest of this presentation, I'm just going to share a few other resources that have been useful to us, and I think could be useful in your own work. And I'm going to go fast because I'm running short on time, but we have forecast data, not just at the regional level, but locally, so links. And it's detailed. You want to know what the workforce is going to look like because you're doing strategic planning. This is useful to you. If you want to know how many people are going to be retired and what that might mean for setting city budgets and taxes and what the reaction is going to be, this information might be helpful to you. You just want to know how many people you have to provide water for? Again, this will be good information. One of my favorite projects that I could spend 2 hours talking about is something that my colleagues John Clark and Henry McCarthy just reached a milestone on. This is now on our website. They have developed a Metropolitan Region Water Supply Planning Atlas. Honestly, it's best if you print it out. 11 by 17 works great. But it's water supply information from many of you summarized in a way that helps set the context and tell the water supply story of the region, and then also customized to different subregions because, you know, we have different aquifer conditions, different watersheds, et cetera, across the region. So I really highly encourage you to check that out. They've done some really creative infographics presenting information about water supply in ways that we have not done before. So this is just an example of how to look at the number of public water supply wells by aquifer in the region, if you want to get a sense of how what we're tapping for our water supply. There's also information about how has water use in our region changed over time. How much are we using for surface water versus groundwater? We also have a great project in our watershed group, an updated priority waters list. And this is a list of the waters in the metro that the council has determined to be regionally significant based on their uses and benefits. And one of the important parts I want to stress to all of you is that drinking water was included as a factor in this evaluation, along with several others, thinking about the value for recreation and tourism, habitat. Just, I think a lot of us during the pandemic understood the value of some of our public spaces for just a place to go and not be as stressed out. Industry, utility, science, education, what's equitable access. So that is a fantastic resource I hope that you all tap into. And I also think that it's this kind of information and the work that's being done, including what you're going to hear later today, that it informs our plans. And so one of the things I did as part of this presentation was went back through plans to the 50s about water supply in the metro area. And are there trends in how we think about what our plans should be? I think there may be a trend over the time in shifting from thinking water supplies are adequate for our needs because we have technically enough, to recognizing that there are some limits. And that's related, I think, to also the trend in thinking about water supply in a more complex way, not just use for the economy or use for drinking water, but use in supporting our trout streams and use in, you know, these more, like, what do we actually use water for? And that's related to, I think, also a trend that goes back to better connecting this technical work that we're doing to really checking in and saying, okay, what is it our communities really actually value? This is not just a quantitative thing. It's like, when you say water is important, what does that mean to you? And kind of going back to how diverse our region is, that means a lot of different things to different people. Yeah, I think our the way that we think about planning and what our needs for the future are changes over time. And so that's what we're sitting at the Met Council with right now, is what conclusions do we want those in the future to tap into from the planning that we're doing today? And so that's kind of where I want to end. And I'm kind of thinking about, you know, we think about TCAP, we think about 3M and the PFAS contamination, we think about Riley Tar, I mean, some of the big contamination sites. Those decisions were made because, hey, these are good jobs, it's gonna bring money into my community, I'm gonna get a little richer. I mean, right, there were good reasons for those decisions. Those were made way before the Safe Drinking Water Act. They were made before the council and regional planning was instituted. They were made before professional geologists in Minnesota were told, hey, you're gonna take an oath to protect public health. We're still making decisions about where do we site those kinds of businesses today. But now we have all of those wellhead protection areas delineated. Like, we know where some important places are where we might make different decisions had we known that before. So I think that's kind of where we're sitting now, is what plans do we want to make? Because we're making 30-year plans at the Met Council. So what should that site be 30 years from now? So I really like your advice on that. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Amanda Yord from the DNR. Thank you for the presentation. I was just curious about, as you were talking about residential development increasing, it's, you know, increasing to areas where it's all domestic wells, and there are some cities that have really dense domestic wells and no municipal supply. So I'm wondering, like, what have you seen over time? Are more cities switching to municipal supply and wastewater? And what is your role? Like, do you encourage cities to do that, or what? Yeah.
Thank you for choosing the hardest of the questions. That is a really great question. And something that I would love to get input on our policies, because it's our policies that help us say this is what our stance is going to be related to questions like that. The Metropolitan Council is not a water supply utility, so our role with water supply guidance is very much sort of providing information. So we kind of leave it up to the locals. We do provide some information about in this area, given your density, this might be increased well conflict risk for you. But that is an area I personally would like to step further into in terms of providing some information about what are the cost trade-offs. You got me speculating here. I don't have a clear answer to you, and I would like to have conversations during this policy and system plan update that will clarify what the council's response to conditions like that should be. We do not see a lot of cities switching from kind of being supplied by private wells to municipal systems. There are a couple of communities in the metropolitan area in the last update of regional plans that were proposing new municipal systems. I think it was two, maybe three. That may change. I think some of the concerns about water quality in our private wells across this region have really shifted and raised public awareness about that public health risk. And knowing that you'd have to do some treatment at home versus the cost of connecting to a municipal system, I mean, it's changed the conversation, I feel. Especially like headlines like what we're seeing in southeast Minnesota and nitrates are part of that conversation. But I think some good information about what those cost trade-offs would be for people so they can make a more informed decision is probably a useful resource. I'd love to get reactions from others here. What do you think the council's role should be? That's what I really want to hear. That was a terrible answer.
Len, I didn't see on any of your slides any mention of water reuse. So what's the Met Council's position on the water reuse in the metro area nowadays?
We are very interested in exploring more about water reuse. There is one of the policy research papers that we're working on focuses on water reuse, and so go to the website that I included here because you can download that whole paper. So we think about water reuse in two ways. Reuse of treated wastewater effluent, and so we have done some exploratory conversations with some industries in the metropolitan area to look at what the costs and the benefits to them might be. So far, the costs of treating wastewater for industrial use have been too high, so the trade-offs aren't there yet. We also are very interested in stormwater reuse, but in that arena, we are very aware that there's an important role for the state agencies to play, thinking about what sort of regulatory or treatment requirements might we want for different uses. So that conversation is going on right now, and we're very excited about the work groups on stormwater reuse that have started up. So, very interested. We know that there's a lot of interest in that, wanting to get some more clarity about what type of guidance should we provide about, you know, what type of treatment or appropriate uses of stormwater reuse so that we can promote that, but we're waiting to hear more, learn more about what the state would expect for that, and continuing to explore wastewater reuse, but that's really kind of industry by industry as they have questions. So, yes, we're interested. And there is more information out there.
All right. Well, okay, now, big thank you to Lana.